Sal Capaccio on the West Her Hotline. Thanks for sitting through that. Sal, this is one of those days where you can't watch practice, correct? Unfortunately, it's too, security's too tight.
Yeah, we're not invited. The media, we get one day. I'll be honest, like, I don't know today. I don't think today they did anything. I could be wrong because they had a community day today. Some of the players visited a local school. So a lot of times when that's happening, that's because it's their off day. But you're only allowed, I believe, 3 days of OTAs through a week. So they have to plan those out accordingly for the players. They don't go 5 days for sure.
So then maybe there's enough license to sort of ask a broad question here. I'm not sure. I probably should have run this by you earlier, but I know you'll have thoughts. Are they done in free agency? You have a collection of recent Bills, especially on defense, like recent Bills players that are, I think, not signed yet, where they could. I know it's a new scheme and everything like that. Maybe it should tell us everything that, you know, they're not back already. And then also receiver, and I guess I dare to include that in this question. Thinking of my fantasy show last night, and they're talking about Diggs and Deebo Samuel and Ayuk even, who would have to be traded. Like, just names that are possibly available or certainly available. And I just kind of wanted to ask you if you think it's just there's no point in bringing the Bills up for any of these players.
I would say there would be points to bring them up. Like, you're right. I think you could think about some of these guys. I'm thinking more about, like, Tre'Davious White, right? Like, I still think they could use something on the outside, another outside corner, some depth. That's a player who, you know him, he knows you. I know it's a new system, but you know he'll come in ready to work. So you don't have to do anything now. You can evaluate what you have. Maybe Toriano Pride becomes something you're like, okay, we're good here. Maybe not, though, and you feel like you need a little something more. To answer your question, literally, are they done with free agency? And I know we don't think you mean literally. No. I mean, they literally signed a guy today.
Right.
Demetrius Flanagan Fowles, right?
Right?
Yeah. So, which is funny. He actually was a converted defensive back. He's a smaller linebacker. He's more of a, to me, a special teams guy, more of a kind of big nickel type of guy. That's really what he would play, I think, in this defense. But I think it's more special teams. So, no, they're not done in free agency from that respect. Are they done in free agency for anything notable? Yeah, I don't really know who's out there. Like, is there a notable name out there that, you know, they could think about grabbing? I don't even know what money they would have to do that with. Again, maybe a guy like a Tre'Davious White. I'm not going to include Matt Milano, but he's not signed, right? If they don't like what they have at linebacker, could they visit something like that? Sure. I think it's notable that they haven't given out 27 or 58 for numbers yet, right? I don't think it has to mean anything,
okay.
But, you know, it's just something you notice.
Yeah, it is. You know, I don't know that we've really talked much about this. We've made mention, and Mike just did it again, the list of guys, and you went right to Tre'Davious White. It's pretty remarkable how many guys that were not just on the Bills, but were playing major roles, starting roles, or, like, you know, most snap percentage of snap count at a position type roles on this team that just aren't signed. I mean, it's kind of stark. Like, it makes me respect how good a season they had. If they had so many guys that were, as the league has judged them, maybe at the end of the line. Like, we'll see. These guys may get a flyer taken on them, and maybe that holds in any of the names that have come up here. But, man, it's really, really something that they were as good as they were, and so many key guys that played big roles are still not employed.
Yeah, especially on defense, right?
And right.
I would extend that to, I mean, I know that the defense wasn't great. Like, and we can say, like, the problems they had, or in the playoffs, they certainly had, you know, some challenges and, you know, didn't have enough depth, and that wound up being their undoing. But I look at the job that they did on defense and what Sean McDermott did. It was arguably one of his better coaching jobs on the defensive side last year, considering everything we're talking about. I mean, they had guys that aren't even in the league now, and yet they were still going out there and, you know, staying in games, making plays, and being a part of a team that, you know, ultimately got to the second round of the playoffs. So I think that is absolutely a fair point to make. But as I've said many times, I think the head coach switch was just as much to do about the defense than it was about to do with the head coach, if not more, which is you can't change the defense if Sean McDermott's your head coach. And if you want to change the defense, and maybe the Bills and their front office and their scouts, you know, that's their job, right? Let's look around the league. What's happening? And if their pro personnel department felt, look, we got guys here that just shouldn't really be playing right now. And we know that this head coach, that these are his guys, this is his defense. We got to change everything. That's how you get to changing out the head coach who's a defensive head coach.
Yep. We talked about yesterday for a minute the run versus pass element of this and whether Leonard can sustain what the Bills were best at over the years with McDermott on defense was pass defense. And even last year, I mean, the numbers are really good. They were literally first in the league in passing yards allowed last year. They were 28th against the run. Maybe ironic that Denver only ran for 70 yards in that playoff game. Like, it was not. Jacksonville, I've said this a lot. I think if Jacksonville, especially Tootin, but even Etienne, if they had just leaned into that harder, they win that game. I mean, they were getting gashed pretty good, the Bills, in Jacksonville. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I don't want to say they got cute because you only say that when a team loses. But they didn't do, easy in hindsight, maybe enough of that. But that's not how Denver did it. I mean, Denver did not run the ball in that playoff game, and they still put up 33 points. So, I don't know. In the end, the run defense isn't what got them beat.
No, there were times where the run defense was really good last year. They go to Carolina. Remember that game? Like, Carolina has this really great, you know, potent rushing attack. And the Bills go to Carolina, and I'm going to look up the stats right now.
114.
Last year, they ran for 4.1 yards a carry. They had, what, 114 total yards. You know, you'll take that all day against that team. But, you know, you look at the big numbers they gave up. 238 in the opener against the Baltimore Ravens. 130 against Miami a couple weeks later. And then New Orleans runs for 189 on them, by the way. They have a nice little run. Atlanta, they give up over 200. They give up over 200 against Tampa Bay, close to 200 again against Miami. Big numbers. And then, but you had games where they actually did a nice job. They kept Cincinnati, Pittsburgh. I know these aren't great rushing attacks. Kansas City down below, New England the first time they played them. You know, so it kind of was feast or famine to me for the run game issue sometimes. I also want to point out, and I think this hasn't been talked about enough, which is part of the... A big part of the issue with the run game, when we think about teams, like when we think about, okay, they're just not good against the run, I think it's a general thought in football to think about the middle of defense. Well, that means they're not good up front, they're not good in the middle, they're not good, you know, at nose tackle, at defensive tackle. I don't think that's where the Bills had their biggest issues last year. The biggest issues were maybe on the edge defending the run last year. Like, teams were killing them on the edge. Joey Bosa was terrible against defending the run last year. We all saw that at times. It wasn't just him, though. And I think a big part of what they're trying to do with this new defensive coordinator and this new defense is to fix that, which is we're not going to get beat on the edge because this defense schematically is going to help that. And we have a guy, Greg Rousseau, who we like to do this, but Bradley Chubb is very good at this. TJ Parker, we drafted, is very good at this. We're going to funnel everything inside, and that really wasn't our issue last year. I think the Bills have made a concerted effort to fix the edge of the defense when it comes to the run game. This year with under Jim Leonard.
There were a couple of big ones where, like, Bijan.
That's right.
They gave up 8 30-plus yard touchdown runs last year. Travion Henderson, 2 in that game in Foxborough. Yep. And the Bills, for their part, had 5 such touchdown runs. They were all 40-plus. Cook, 3 times. But, yeah, like, or 4 times, actually. But you can remember those plays, like the Bijan one, Achan, you know, in Miami. Sean Tucker, right, Sal? I mean, Syracuse guy that didn't have much of a season overall, didn't play a lot, but still had a day here.
Sal, as you're talking about this, the defense and what they want to improve on as far as defending the run and funneling everything inside, my brain went to Terrell Bernard. And that's not a guy. I know we heard from Jim Leonard yesterday, and we went over a lot of what he talked about. And I know, I don't think Dorian Williams came up in here yesterday when we were visiting with you, but I know Leonard mentioned him as someone specifically who has a chance to really, like, carve out a role or something to that effect in this defense. How much of a better feel, if at all, do you have now of the fit of Bernard in the middle of this defense?
I have felt since this defense switched that Terrell Bernard would be a better fit in this new defense than he was in the former defense. And I've felt for a while watching Terrell Bernard that he probably is more suited in the NFL to be a 3-4 inside linebacker than a 4-3 middle linebacker simply because of his size. I think he's fine as a, like, the way he plays is fine as a 4-3 middle linebacker. I just think the size wears on him, right? He's just too small to withstand a 17-game season and the rigors of what goes against. It's not that he can't do the job. He can. But, you know, that really weighs on you and wears on you, and that's why he's had some injuries. I think this new defense will keep him healthier. I think Terrell Bernard in this new defense is going to be a much more frequent blitzer. And that's going to be a big deal for the Bills. He's a good blitzer, and I think they'll use him in that role more, to be able to blitz and to be able to find seams. And he doesn't have to be just go take on, you know, big offensive linemen all the time and do the role of a traditional 4-3 middle backer. So I do think that that's going to be a really nice fit for him. Now, we also know that he's still, in whatever capacity, recovering from an ankle injury last year, or making sure at least that they're not doing anything dumb so he doesn't have any setbacks and they want him full go. And we talked about this with him this past week, and Jim Leonard's mentioned that. Not that he can't, he's participating, right? But you just want to be smart with these guys right now because you do want him fully healthy. But next to him, yes, Leonard did talk about Dorian Williams. It's funny because he said a lot of really nice things about Dorian Williams. I thought he really talked really well about Caleb Ealarms-Orr, the new rookie middle inside linebacker. I think, guys, the more that this is going on, this is the biggest open competition on the team.
Linebacker, like, we could talk about left guard, linebacker.
Yep. We could talk about left guard, and I think that's Alec Anderson's to lose. Like, yes, it's a competition. They're not going to hand it to him, but I think Alec Anderson, that's his job. If he doesn't win it, then that's on him. To me, like, I don't know if I could handicap a guy right now at inside linebacker. You're going to see most likely Dorian Williams line up and take the first snap at training camp because he's a four-year veteran over a rookie. I get it. I think absolutely Caleb Ealarms-Orr could win that job.
You know, you mentioned him. That's a fourth-round pick. We had a word on Igbinosun yesterday. That's a late second-round pick at corner. T.J. Parker, the first player the Bills drafted, early second in this draft, trading out of the first round. What are his prospects for you? How high is the ceiling, even as a rookie?
Well, I don't think the ceiling is super high. I do think the floor is pretty good, though. I like what he can bring to the table right away to be a contributor and a guy that you can trust to be on the field. I don't think he's going to be a guy that you're going to be getting these wild plays from, and, you know, he's out there going and, you know, like is he going to be on the all-rookie team? You know, I mean, like, those are probably really too lofty of expectations, but I think that the way I see him and fitting into this defense, we're not going to blink too much when you see him on the field on first and second down sometimes. I'm like, okay, yep, he can do the job. He'll be fine. He's going to know exactly where to be. He's going to do his job properly. I think that's why they drafted him. They needed, you know, Brandon Bean compared his game to Bradley Chubb. Bradley Chubb's like the perfect fit for this defense. They targeted him specifically. They hired Jim Leonard. Bradley Chubb comes from Bradley Chubb's first year in Miami, I think, was under Vance Joseph. Well, Vance Joseph was in Denver. Where did Jim Leonard come from? Denver, right? So, like, I think that they identified him right away as a guy. Okay, he can come in. He can play this spot. We really like him. We need guys just like him. T.J. Parker, Brandon Bean said, has a very similar game. So I think he's going to fit seamlessly into what they want to do. Sure, will there be some, you know, growing pains as a rookie? That might happen. But I think this is a three-down player. They're going to use him and not really worry about necessarily protecting him and just kind of putting him in as the rotation. So to answer your question, Mike, I don't think the floor is super high. I'm sorry, I don't, the ceiling is super high in year one, but I think his floor is pretty high where he's going to be on the field and contribute.
How about Rousseau in this defense, Sal? I feel like we've really talked much about him and the transition, however much of one it will be, right? I assume less or no hand on the ground listed as a linebacker. Do you think this has the potential to sort of free him up, or, I don't know, could he get bogged down trying to figure out how to subtly play a different position?
He might be the guy in the front seven I'm more the most interested in this question, because I don't know. I think Greg Rousseau, his physical traits just allow him to be a good football player, right? I mean, like, I know that, you know, the Bills made him a first-round pick, and there's always this debate on, you know, well, he hasn't even had double-digit sacks. I get it. He's a good football player. He helps out this team. Yep. And, you know, they gave him a nice contract, right? He's going into his sixth season. He had, what, seven sacks last year, eight the year before that. But he's a good run defender, and he just does everything really solid. And that brings me back to Chubb and TJ Parker, and those guys are good at that. But I'm just really interested in this question myself, Bulldog. I don't know. Like, I could see two different – this could go two different ways. I think we could be talking, you know, halfway through the year about, oh, my God, like, geez, he is so good in this scheme. Like, wow, great. They have unlocked him. He goes inside, uses his length. They can move him around. We could also be halfway through the year going, yeah, you know, this just is one of those guys that they might need to get out of this contract because he does not fit in this scheme. I don't know. It's going to be really interesting.
Yeah, I should have asked him at that blackjack thing.
Right, Mike.
That was my chance.
Mike sure to
get some, you know, some
blackjack table
one-on-one questions.
All right. Right,
I sat next to him at that from at Seneca Niagara, the celebrity blackjack.
I didn't hear much about the. How did you do in that?
You could laugh. I played great. Okay, let me just start with that. So I played great.
He didn't win. So
I did not win any of the first nine hands.
Oh my God!
And one of the Lee Evans was at my table.
How are you giving yourself a "I played great" if you didn't win any of the nine hands?
There are good and bad plays in blackjack, and even in a tournament, you asked me now. Even in a tournament context, I made a couple of moves like against my table that they tell you that you want to do.
Yeah,
but I was just, you know, I was having fun with it. And Evans, who I have known a little bit and really like, Lee Evans, he was across at the same time. He won the table, and at one point he said to me, "It only takes one hand, Mike." I'm like, yeah, but that was it. The one that I just lost, that was the one hand. Like, you're not. I had 20. Okay, I wasn't supposed to lose that one. I had 20.
Yeah.
But
are you book rule guy at the blackjack table?
Usually, but
me too.
In a tournament, you're not playing against the dealer as much.
That's
as you're playing
right.
against the, like, Rousseau and Evans. Like, that's
yep.
who I was trying. I was trying to beat them. There was a hand that we all lost. Like, the dealer got blackjack or something, and the whole table lost. And Rousseau was like, "Oh, like, no, that's good." Because those guys bet more than we did. So that's good for us. We lost less. You got to have some of those, too. All right. That's your blackjack quota. Back to talking about, like, free agent possibilities. Mm-hmm. I just would be curious for your thoughts on Diggs. Not even necessarily for the Bills, if it's so unlikely or just not ever going to happen. Deebo Samuel, too. Like, we've done it for years. We can always make an argument that the Bills could use another weapon. I know those guys are older, but I wonder, Diggs especially, because of course of his history here, have you thought about, like, what kind of fit maybe there is for him somewhere? Do you like a certain team for him perhaps? He did. New England ran him off, but he did have what? Did he have 1,000 yards for them last year? He had a season.
Very good year, I would say. Maybe not great, but very good.
I mean, I don't know what team wants to kind of deal with that, with everything that goes along with it. But at the same time, yeah, you're bringing in a guy who just year after year seems to produce. I would say that would stun me. Like, if you woke up tomorrow and found out, like, the Bills were doing that.
Wow.
That would stun me almost more than anything I could think of this offseason.
Yeah.
Like, just not, it's not happening. He's not coming back to Buffalo. The Bills aren't, to me, interested in that in any capacity. But, you know, there's just a lot of noise around that. And I just wonder, I don't know if there's a team that you could see.
I like Vegas, you know, Sal.
I was thinking about Baltimore, right? Because aren't they a team that kind of does things like that once in a while? Like, you feel, oh, well, they just signed Stephon Diggs. You know, well, Vegas, interesting. Yeah, interesting there. They're trying to win. You know, they're trying to kind of turn everything around over there. But, no, I don't know about him specifically. And he is getting older. And I think there's been, over the last few years, maybe a little bit diminishing returns as the season's gone on, even last year a little bit in New England. And we saw that in Buffalo before his tenure ended here. I don't think the Bills are looking to add a wide receiver at this point, especially like a name, like a guy that, like, oh, that's interesting. But I would tell you, the last 2 weeks I've gone out to practice for the days we can watch, and Josh Palmer's working off to the side, right? And he had injuries last year. And
yeah,
Shakir had a thing.
Yeah. And Shakir had it in the offseason. You mean in the offseason, right?
Yeah.
When he had the. But he's been out there working. But, like, Josh Palmer hasn't. I mean, he's there.
It looks like it started right back up where we left off in January.
Let's just play this out. What if you just really unsure? Is Josh Palmer going to play this year? Is there going to be injuries? Is he, like, what does that look like? Because now you're looking at DJ Moore, Khalil Shakir, a questionable Keon Coleman because of everything, a questionable Skylar Bell because he's a rookie and you hope, But like now you are at a spot where you got to start thinking about maybe adding someone.
Ravens are so, this came up on ADP chasing last night. Like, so, I mean, in a sense, perfect for the Diggs idea. Remember Dez Bryant in the playoff game here for Baltimore, the Taron Johnson game, Dez Bryant's getting targets.
Didn't they just do Hopkins?
DeAndre Hopkins. Right? Yes. They, they've done plenty of this kind of thing. Bolden, was he late stage Bolden when he was in Baltimore? Like sort of like that's the right team for the stereotype.
Yeah.
Would be. I like it for Vegas, Diggs for Vegas, even though the obvious points you can make about, you know, lifestyle. But, you know, they could use one more. He could be their Myers. They traded Myers last year, possession. He would have, possibly, I can't say for sure, if not for the injury midseason in Houston, he would be on a Mike Evans-like streak of 8 straight 1,000-yard years. Yeah. Diggs, but you know he doesn't have that because of what happened in Houston.
Yeah,
but he was on that kind of pace.
I wonder what's happening. Do we know what's going on with Davante Adams? Could LA be a team that could do something like that? Like they could use a guy.
That's interesting. Yeah. That would scare me for fantasy because those two guys are so locked in. But people do talk about the Rams as a team that could use one more. That's right. Their wide receiver three names are really like you couldn't even name them.
Yes.
So.
Well, there's a guy on their roster I'm looking at named True Edwards. I don't even know. And it's T-R-U, no E, True Edwards.
Yep. True or false, he goes by.
What do you think happens to Ayuk? Because he might be the best player. Well, when we last saw him, I mean, what is that? It's going on 2 years now?
That's got to be June 1,
this
right?
This is such a bizarre situation. Like, I just, and I don't feel like we really hear anything about it, but you're right. June 1, maybe we'll get some action here in the next few days because with, you know, June 1 coming, A.J. Brown, whatever.
Yeah. Washington.
I tell you, well, and I know this is something you've probably talked about in your fantasy circles, Mike, but all this stuff with Malik Nabers is interesting, right? And the Giants are right there, and, you know, they're trying to kind of elevate themselves a little bit. And I wonder what they're going to do at wide receiver.
That's a good one. That's a really sticky one because Nabers will be back. So how big of an investment would they want to make in a player? But they might think we don't really have an X receiver to start the season here. And we're trying to establish a quarterback. And yeah, I don't know. Darnell Mooney is probably not that guy for the Giants. He's who is there. Okay, Sal, thanks for your time as always.
You got it, guys. Thanks.
Aaron Rodgers is back. You might have predicted it. I think that was kind of the consensus expectation that he would be back. Were you personally, emotionally, psychologically ready for another go-round with Aaron Rodgers?
Look, as long as he doesn't go on certain sports shows and run his mouth about things not pertaining to football, he can stay as long as he wants. To be honest with you, like from a media standpoint, but more from a even more from the Steelers standpoint, that guy leaned into being here last year, you know, and everybody's wringing their hands, you know, because it was taking a little bit longer than maybe some anticipated. But the reality is that when he signed last June, right before mandatory minicamp, he said, I wouldn't make that decision until I knew I could be all in. And he was, to his credit, all in from the day that he signed until the day after the season ended with that first round playoff loss to the Texans. He was absolutely fully committed to being here, and that bought him a lot of equity in the locker room and in the front office. It was just weird that, you know, Art Rooney II sort of made the mistake of trying to put him on a timeline, which, look, this guy's got a 20-plus year track record of doing whatever he wants, whenever the hell he wants, and he does not care about your expectations. So that was a little weird. But, look, in the end, you know, and he – there was a little bit of haggling over the money, but look, what other job is he going to get the rest of his life that's going to pay him $15 million, at least $15 million? Not that he needs the money, but that's the reality too, right? Like, you know, he's not going to, you know, unless he takes over. Actually, you know what? There's some jokes there. I'm just going to leave there. I'm going to work and move on. I'm sorry. Who knows what this guy's going to do after football?
Yep.
But he did what he said he was going to do. He got here. The only thing that surprised me is that he got here for OTAs, which are voluntary. And he even said last year, you know, football in shorts in May is not his favorite thing. And he thought that maybe the refs would better be distributed to the younger players. But this time, reuniting with Mike McCarthy, one last run for the boys, He got here on time, and I mean, he has been very active. I mean, I am sort of stunned at the amount of passing that his 42-year-old arm is doing in June. Or I'm sorry, we're not even in June yet, in May. But he's been all in, and they certainly are leaning into sort of what they can out of him while he's still here.
What are the expectations, you know, either internally or within the fan base? Because, like, he was pretty good last year, right? Is that a fair assessment, or am I underselling it?
No, he was pretty good, though. I would say that sort of the returns diminished, A, late in the season, yeah, and B, when they played really good teams, right?
Right.
You know, he did have moments. I mean, you know, he won them, you know, basically, like, he won them a couple games down the stretch, which is what Aaron Rodgers does. And he was fine. I think the expectation is that this team wants to compete for a division title again and make the playoffs and, you know, hopefully get in there with a puncher's chance. You look at some of the moves they made in the offseason to give him better weapons. You know, they traded for Michael Pittman Jr. They signed Rico Dowdle after Kenny Gainwell signed with the Bucks. They signed Jeremy Bernard, wide receiver out of they drafted him out of Georgia. You know, so there are more maybe more downfield weapons, mm-hmm, than they had a year ago. He wasn't a great passer down the field last year, but maybe part of that is because most of the guys were, you know, if it was DK Metcalf, usually he had a lot of attention on him. So,
yeah,
you know, they're optimistic that they can be competitive, and sort of that is the blessing and the curse of sort of being the Steelers. They're sort of always going for it. They don't cycle up and cycle down. Like, they haven't. I mean, their last losing season was in 2003. And that's not – you guys know this. That's not normal. Like, they're the only team in the – like, I think they tied Dallas's record for longest consecutive non-losing seasons. The league isn't designed for that. They think they're special. They're special enough to go 10-7 and get whooped in the first round of the playoffs, and it's hard to imagine it ending any differently this time around. But this is what they're committed to, and at least, you know, like I say this a lot, the brand is the brand, and the brand for the Steelers is to try to go forward even when maybe you don't have the talent or the depth to do it.
Yeah, it's been kind of a Groundhog Day existence, if that's not too obvious a cliche, to describe the Steelers the last few years. Maybe it would have been better. I mean, you're a writer. Maybe it would have been better for me to ask about Tomlin leaving and McCarthy than even Rodgers, as big an entity as Rodgers is in the league. What has that been like, life post Mike Tomlin so far?
It's very, very odd. You know, I kind of had a feeling, I can't remember when the last time I talked to you guys, if it was after the season or not, but the day after Christmas, I was at practice, and I'm walking by Mike, and we struck up a conversation, and I just asked him how the Christmas was and how it's different now with his youngest is just finished her sophomore year at Georgia. His boys are grown and out of the house. And I asked him what it was like having them come home for Christmas, and, you know, we had a very pleasant 5 minutes. And then I kind of walked down to watch the rest of practice. I turned to one of the other writers, and I kind of relayed the gist of our conversation. And I was like, you know, there's nothing keeping him here. If he wants to leave, he can leave. And I will say that this was my 15th – last year was my 15th year covering the team. It was the first time I had a story ready in case he stepped down. I was a little surprised with the swiftness of it. But, you know, Mike – you know, for all of his detractors, that man can read the room better than anybody. And I think that he sensed that it was time for something else. And, you know, McCarthy, it's very, very different. I mean, from a covering the team standpoint, let me give you an example literally from today. So today was day five of OTAs, I think, for them. I'm not keeping track. I think it was day five.
Mm-hmm.
And Mike Tomlin hated talking to the media outside of his Tuesday windows and postgame. He hated doing it. It was not his, you know, like we were told, if you wanted him outside of those windows, be prepared for very curt answers, and you better be very specific about what you need him for. He's the only coach in the league that was like that. McCarthy's like the exact opposite. Today he comes over and talks for 15 minutes and would have kept going if he had not been cut off by the great Bert Lawton, the PR chief for the Steelers. It's just way, I mean, you know, he makes the assistant coaches available on a regular basis because he wants to have a coaching tree, and he wants, you know, fans and the media to have a better understanding of how things work. It is very, very different. You know, he even said today, there's not a lot of barking this time of year. There's not a lot of, you know, yelling at guys. There's not a lot of getting on guys. It's all about teaching and getting film. A couple of players have talked to me about how detailed the practices are, and I'm not saying that they weren't detailed under Mike. I would just say maybe the amount of detail is much higher than it had been under. That being said, I still, like, I was talking to Jalen Warren, the Steelers running back, today about this. I'm like, do you keep expecting him to, like, just hear his voice, Mike T's voice, just sort of crack out of the blue? Because that's what you would hear at practice when, you know, and it's, that part is very, very odd. And the irony is, because there's so much else going on with the team, with Rodgers coming back and then saying, you know, sort of out of the blue at the end of his time talking to us last week, that this was going to be it for him, which we all kind of expected. I don't think none of us expected him to say it then, right? There's been so much going on with this team. Like, the Mike Tomlin's absence, we haven't really had a chance to really dive into it yet. But I think, you know, especially once we get to training camp, I think it's going to be noticeable. And look, change is good sometimes. He's probably going to the Hall of Fame if he never coaches again, and I think he will. But it is just a very, very different vibe here than it was when Mike Tomlin was the head coach.
Where are you on how good of a coach McCarthy is? I felt like by the end of his Green Bay years, and this, of course, includes Rodgers, and, you know, our buddy Tyler Dunn wrote a big expose about all of that, which made it more surprising to me that this would have happened. But maybe I misread that. It's just like by the end of McCarthy in Green Bay and then in Dallas, he seemed like kind of a punchline. Maybe there was a lot of unfairness to that. I don't know. He's really never been my favorite.
I mean, the idea that this guy is some bum off the street, which is, you know, how some of the fan base reacted, is a little weird to me.
Mm-hmm.
He and Tomlin's resumes are similar. I mean, look, if the Steelers went 12-5 3 years in a row, I think the fans would be like, this guy's a pretty good coach, right? Which is what he did in Dallas until the last year, which, by the way, they went 7-10 without Dak Prescott playing the second half of the year, getting by with Cooper Rush and, you know, some other dudes you've never heard of, right? So, mm-hmm. You know, I think it's a little unfair. I think he's won, right? I mean, the team will, I would expect the team to be competitive. Do I think they're the best team in the division? No, I don't. I mean, I firmly believe that Cincinnati is significantly better. And there's a chance, who knows with the Ravens, but I think the Ravens will probably be better too. But, I mean, he's a good coach. I mean, the part of the problem here is, like, if you live in Pittsburgh, if you cover the Steelers, look, this is, you know, like, they lean into this being stability. They've obviously, no team has been, outside of the Patriots, has been more successful for the last 56 years than the Steelers, and even the Patriots run is sort of limited to one specific group, whereas mm-hmm. the Steelers have had separate runs of excellence. But you get sort of blinded to how the rest of the world lives. You guys have lived through it up there in Buffalo. I grew up in the D.C. suburbs. The football team there was great when I was a kid and then was trash for the next 30 years in a joke. And, you know, if the Bills had hired Mike McCarthy, if Washington hired Mike McCarthy, I think the fans would be like, oh, we got a guy that can win some football games, instead of being like, oh, my God. I mean, the irony is this guy's a Pittsburgh guy. The neighborhood he grew up in, you can literally see the Steelers practice field from the top of the hill in the neighborhood where Mike McCarthy grew up, right? Like, it's a homecoming, and I think that he understands this is his last job. And, you know, I think are there clock management issues, I guess, but I mean, you know, in this day and age, every coach gets nitpicked for their clock management. I mean, I get it. Mike Tomlin himself was hardly above reproach in that department. You know, it's weird. Like, you know, the Steelers have made their bones for, I mean, you know, Chuck Knoll was an unknown. Bill Cowher was largely an unknown. Mike Tomlin was definitely an unknown when they were hired, and this was pre-social media, right? And I would imagine, you know, I'd imagine those hires would have been, if X and everybody else, all these everywhere else that existed then, it would have been met with, what?
Who's this guy, right?
Where? And now they, and instead the Steelers, for the first time in 50-some years, they hire a guy with a resume and people are upset about it, which is weird to me. I mean, I think you could make the argument certainly that he is, like, you know, the mirror image of Tomlin, one Super Bowl win, some spectacular regular seasons and some epic playoff flameouts. You know, but I do think the guy can coach. This is not going to be a disaster by any stretch.
Will Graves, Associated Press in Pittsburgh, on the beat with the Steelers on the Western Hotline with us for a couple of more minutes here. Will, how have both guys here that we've talked about, McCarthy and Rodgers, talked about their relationship and whether it ever was rocky, and whether this was an uncomfortable marriage of sorts at all for either side since they've been reunited in Pittsburgh? Or has that subject just not really come up?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, when Aaron was still in Green Bay, the first time McCarthy came in with the Cowboys in 21, you know, he was asked that week about, you know, facing Mike, and Mike had been gone for a couple of years at that point. And he was very complimentary. And I think, you know, Aaron kind of, at this point in his career, sort of understood how good he had it back then. I mean, one of the reasons he's going to the Hall of Fame is because of Mike McCarthy, to be very, very clear. And I think that he understands and respects that. I think they like to butt heads, but I mean, Aaron would like that no matter who his coach. I mean, he just sort of loves to be himself. So, you know, I think that, you know, they're going to be fine. I mean, will there be rough patches? I mean, maybe, but it's going to be more results-based than just the fact that these guys can't stand each other. Like, that's certainly not the case. I think that they're both sort of happy to have this, you know, one last moment. And, you know, the real question with the Steelers is, like, you know, what do they do behind him, behind Aaron Rodgers? And you've got, you know, Mason Rudolph, you know, a veteran. You kind of know what you got in him. They got Will Howard, the kid from Ohio State, who was basically hurt most of last year. And then they drafted Drew Aller out of Penn State. The question is, what do you do at the end of the preseason? My guess is, the smart thing for the Steelers to do would be to, like, I imagine some other team somewhere will have injury issues, a quarterback, and you could trade maybe you could flip Mason Rudolph for like a seventh rounder, right? And then one of two things happen this year if you keep the kids behind Rodgers. Either Aaron stays healthy and the team is good, or Aaron gets hurt, which I think is the more likely scenario, and you finally find out if either of these two guys can play, and then you get to next year's draft, and maybe you can finally, after five years after Ben Roethlisberger retired, and probably 8 years after they should have planned for yes. his succession, maybe you finally find the guy that can be the guy for the next 10 to 15 years.
Never too late, I guess. The Steelers, by the way, as you may know, the team that the Packers beat, Rodgers and McCarthy's one Super Bowl win. I mean, interesting that Rodgers has just the one, but that was against Pittsburgh in February of 11. Well, I was hoping that there would be, and thinking of the Bills, too, with their coaching change after, what, 9 years of Sean McDermott? Here are Tomlin and John Harbaugh, who doubled that, both out in their respective cases. I was kind of hoping for a Pittsburgh-Baltimore game well before Christmas. Even maybe early, so you could sort of have the storyline of the two teams. So is it the record for most head-to-head meetings for coaches, Tomlin and Harbaugh?
I mean,
so
they were second behind Hallis and Curly Lambeau. They were second.
Okay, thank you. So that's not going to happen. I don't think it's Christmas, but they play Week 15 is their first meeting, the Ravens and the Steelers. I mean, I don't know what this is as a question. It's just so interesting that this happened to the two teams, and I guess the Bills also at the same time.
Yeah, I mean, it was a very jarring, you know, stretch there postseason. I mean, it's crazy how, like, one missed kick,
yeah,
you know, altered the trajectory. I mean, if that kid makes that kick in Week 18, Harbaugh's probably still the coach of the Ravens, you know? And if they miss it, maybe Mike says, I'm not going out without – reaching the playoffs, I'm going to come back for one more year. Like, I literally think that could have happened, especially because he was literally tied with Chuck Knoll for most wins all time in franchise history, right? Which is just like a staggering, staggering hall of, you know, Mount Rushmore. I mean, that is a career-defining thing if he would have slipped past Chuck. So, but that's, you know, the Steelers sort of have insulated themselves from a lot of this change. They, like I mentioned earlier, they sort of pride themselves on it. But look, you know, Father Time is undefeated. Eventually the Turk comes for us all. And, you know, I think it will be, you know, I think this year is, we're not going to really get a really true post Mike Tomlin type feel for this team until the Steelers find that quarterback. I really think that what we're going to see next year is going to be a team that's going to be done. You know, the defense is going to, you know, the TJ Watts of the world and the Cam Haywards of the world are going to have to be excellent have to carry the team maybe probably early in the season. And then, you know, you'll have Aaron Rodgers kind of back there to maybe trying to find a little bit of magic. But I really think the identity of this franchise is not going to what it's going to look like. You know, it's going to be sort of like a one-off Tomlin light almost in a weird way this year from a result standpoint. And then I think next year in 27, we're going to have a much better feel for what the Mike McCarthy era in Pittsburgh is going
to
be.
Well, you mentioned Hayward and Watt, two cornerstone players on that defense. How capable at this point in their careers of carrying anything do you think they are? And is everything finally sort of calm and cool on the Watt front? Like there was every year there was like, you know, this guy got paid and he's in line. Like, is that all in the past now?
Well, I mean, yeah, because the irony is I think TJ's probably considers himself pretty fortunate to get the paycheck that he's making. I mean, I think there was some concern late in the year. There was a production drop off. It's the guy's 20 years younger than I am. To say that he's sort of like on the wrong side of 30 is kind of a jerk. Makes me kind of a jag off to borrow a Pittsburghese. But he certainly looked like he has lost a fraction of a step, right? I think they have new defensive coordinator Patrick Graham. I think his job is going to be to find ways to free TJ up, because for most of TJ's career, it's like just line him up there on the left side, let him do his thing, and good luck to whoever the right tackle and whoever happens to be the quarterback, right? Like that was literally their plan. And now I think you're going to see him moving around a lot more and justifying the fact that he was, you know, is still one of the highest paid non-quarterbacks in the league. Cam Hayward, I don't want to say he can play forever, but man, it certainly looks like, you know, he can play. This will be a 16th season. Every once in a while, Calais Campbell's one of those guys, right? You'll find some interior defensive lineman that can kind of just stick around forever. Cam certainly looks to be that guy, a lifelong Steeler. I also think Cam's thinking about the Hall of Fame, and I think that he thinks that he can make it, you know, another couple years and get another All-Pro, but another second-team All-Pro, another Pro Bowl nod in his late 30s. He thinks that's going to bolster his resume. And I do think he does want the team to, you know, win a Super Bowl or at least get to one while he's here. And I don't see that happening. I just don't. I think that they're pretty good. But I think, like, we've seen in that Houston game last year, I mean, it's essentially the same team coming back. Different head coach, but a lot of familiar faces outside of, as I mentioned, Michael Pittman and and a couple of others. Hard to imagine a different result. But, I do think that, those guys can be effective. Staying healthy is going to be key for them, especially for TJ. And this problem the Steelers have now is like Nick Herbig, who's been a bit of a great find for them, finishing his third year, now eligible for a new contract because he was a third-round pick. So, you know, he's entering his fourth season. So his contract expires after this year. He certainly looks like the 3.0 version of TJ Watt. He's not a future Hall of Famer, but he can be a very, very effective pass rusher. The Steelers got to figure out how much they want to pay him, and can they afford to pay him and Alex Highsmith and TJ Watt a lot of money? One of those guys you would sit there and think would be the odd man out. I think TJ's salary makes him sort of untouchable. If the Steelers get a call for Alex Highsmith, who is a really, really solid pro, and the price is right, could they make a move? I think it's possible. They have Jack Sawyer, you know, from Ohio State that they drafted last year, who is not a get to the quarterback all the time kind of guy, but it can definitely be a set the edge, a slightly lesser version of Alex Highsmith. So that's sort of the question that they really have. How much are they willing to pay a premium? How much of a premium are they willing to pay to have as many disruptive guys there on the edge as possible? And I just wonder in this day and age with the economics of the league, if that's possible to carry three guys that are probably, you know, Highsmith's making in the 20s, TJ's is up in the 30s, and I imagine Herbig would be pretty close to $20 million at this point a year if he gets a new deal. That's a lot of money for a very specific skill set.
Will Graves of the AP in Pittsburgh. Thanks for your time, Will. Hope to talk to you again when we get close to the season. The Bills and Steelers will not face each other this regular season, so we'll have to try to jam that in if you're up for it.
All right, shout out to the great John Warrow. See you guys later.
There it is. Thanks, Will.
Bills back at OTAs. Jim Leonard will meet with the media today, and our own Sal Capaccio will be there later today. He joins us on the Wester Hotline as we continue gearing up for the Bills offseason and talking about the state of the team. Sal, good morning.
Good morning, guys. Hope you had a great Memorial Day weekend.
Yeah, not bad, you know. We gave Mike Shope full credit for his theory that it's always nice on Memorial Day, how it lived up to it yet again.
Oh, yeah. Mike and I have talked about this in the past. Agreed. It's amazing. And we were texting about it yesterday. It's crazy that we didn't start off that way. I think a couple of years ago we finally had a down one, but it's like very few far in between. And to be honest, and the crazy part is for many years, the Jim Kelly golf tournament was the Monday after Memorial Day, and it was always bad weather, like rainy and cold. Mm-hmm. That's been moved, by the way, to August. So it was always the weirdest thing. Memorial Day, great weather. Then the following Monday, like in June, not great weather. But this year, it was awesome. We have a great week of dry weather, which is great because we've had too much rain. Yeah. As you know, Jeremy, at Shoshone, you're now a coach, right? I mean, rain outs and things like that. Now, I think we're going to play a lot of we have a lot of baseball on the plate this week. I'll say that.
Yeah. Hopefully, everything's dried out well enough. And again, this week should help. Sal, the Bills are back to work this week, OTAs, and we're going to hear from Jim Leonard today, correct?
Yeah, that's the plan. Jim Leonard will speak to the media before practice. They'll be on the field. The team will be on the field a little before 1 p.m. I think Leonard speaks a little after noon.
So you've started your State of the Bills series, and you've shifted over to the defensive side of the ball, edge rusher, outside linebacker. And I feel like there are questions for Leonard today about that group and about how it might come together. Because would you say that of everything that they've got on that side of the ball, that this is the group that – I don't want to say boom or bust, but it feels like this group might make or break what this team can ultimately be.
Yeah, I think because of the new defense, this might be the one position where there's so much of a change in kind of the role and the fit and people wondering like how – look, I mean, I understand like Ed Oliver, defensive tackle – but I think this is the one where, what are you really asking these guys to do? And do you have the right parts? And who fits well? Who doesn't? Who's it a better scheme fit for? Who's it not a better scheme fit for? And I think that's the proof is in the pudding what they did, guys. I mean, you think about it, and I wrote about this. Their top free agent acquisition was this position, and their top draft pick was this position. They spent their two biggest resources this offseason. Now, I understand they traded a second-round pick for DJ Moore, so that's fine. But I mean the most money on a free agent and their top draft choice on the same position, which is edge rusher, and in this defense we can call it outside linebacker. I'm fine with calling it whatever you guys want,
right.
But you can call it either in this defense, edge rusher or outside linebacker, but that's where they spent the majority of their resources this offseason.
And that's kind of what I mean about make or break, because there are other positions that have questions, but this one I feel like I could get to. It might be a group that really comes together and given the change in defense really flourishes, or it might be, I guess, the other side of that, which is it doesn't, as we're waiting to see what ultimately Jim Leonard's defense looks like.
I think that if it doesn't, it's probably because of the fit, not necessarily the players. I mean, we could argue, you know, Greg Rousseau and, well, he should be better than he is. I mean, he's been a good player. He hasn't been a double-digit sack guy. He had 7 last year, 8 the year before that, I believe it was. But Bradley Chubb has been very good in the league. We know that. You know, we saw what Michael Hoyt did last year. TJ Parker is you know, an early draft pick for this team. So, sure, I mean, maybe they don't have all the right, you know, players, pieces, but I think it's more about fit. If we're talking towards the end of the year, if we're in the middle of the year going, man, they just don't have enough there, I think we're having a debate at that time whether it's the players or the scheme. You know what I mean? Like, do the players fit the scheme, or is it just the players aren't good enough? It's going to be a really interesting. Now, if everything hits and these guys are good fits and they're smashing and playing really well and getting to the quarterback and stopping the run, like, you know, better than they were last year, then we're all like, okay, like this was better for the team to do. But if we're having questions about this position, I think we're having debates. Mm-hmm. You guys are going to be doing that on the radio about player versus scheme and fit, basically.
Right. And Hoyt could play into that too, right? Like, just if he can't stay healthy throughout the year, that could create a huge variable, right? Like, because if he has more injury problems and then a rookie's got to play more than you want or whatever, versus if he's just healthy and contributing a lot, like, that can make a big difference. And also, Sal, like, how much have we heard about the difference in what they're asked to do? Not just like where they line up and, you know, are they over the tackle? Are they further out wide? Are they standing up? But does it feel like maybe with Leonard that the – what's the way I want to put it? Like, the chains are off a little bit. Like, they could be a little bit more aggressive in going after the quarterback, because that always seemed to be the reputation under Sean McDermott, was how important it was to be responsible in rush lanes, and maybe it wasn't as much make or break, just go get the quarterback at all costs.
Yeah, I think this weaves into the other linebacker position, which obviously I'll get to later in the week, but they will be more aggressive, I think, Joe. But I think your aggressiveness is going to come from different forms. It doesn't have to be from this particular spot. This particular spot is going to be asked to do a lot. Yes, they can go after the quarterback, but you're going to see, I think you're going to see, like, for example, Terrell Bernard blitzing more. And that's going to maybe leave a Greg Rousseau or a Bradley Chubb to be able to stay home and kind of, you know, filter the run a little bit, or the rush lane or something. Yes, you could actually absolutely have these guys. I don't want to paint the picture that they're going to be stay at home outside linebackers. What I mean, though, is I think that this is going to be a defense where you don't know where guys are coming from and where one person's coming from. Maybe someone else isn't, and they'll be able to kind of play a different spot there. Sure, you can both get after the quarterback. You can blitz two guys, or you can have the edge rushers go and blitz somebody, have somebody stay home. I do think they'll be more aggressive, but I think the aggressiveness is going to come in the form of maybe the unknowing from the offense. Look, Sean McDermott's defense was based on knowing your assignment and doing your assignment really well. It also could be a little predictable because of where you line up and doing that, and that's fine. Like, because if you do it, it doesn't matter if you're predictable. If you do it well, it should be okay. And I think that was always the big, you know, the big core principle of his defense, which is, hey, you might know where we're going to line up, but we're still going to be better, and we're going to do it the way we're supposed to do it and be very kind of fundamentally sound, right? I think in this defense is, you don't know where we're going to line up, and you kind of don't know what we're going to do after we line up, to be honest with you.
Right. At this position, you write about seven different guys. How many do you feel like there will be a rotation? How many do you feel like reasonably there could be a rotation of? Like, are we talking five guys that would dress on game days and all get playing time? Do you think that's possible?
It's a great question, because I think you have to look at the entire defensive front and how many they want to keep. Now, haven't gotten there yet, but right now there are seven. And actually, I didn't include, and I should have, there's actually eight, because they did have a undrafted free agent, Cade Denhoff is an undrafted free agent. So let's add him in there. So that's eight. And then if you actually look at the defensive tackle / defensive end, if we want to call him that now, which is more of a down lineman, there's 10. So there's 18 of those guys. Like, how many are actually going to be part of this rotation? How many are going to make the team? I think, yes, I think five sounds about right. You're looking at Rousseau, Chubb, TJ Parker, for sure they're on the team. I think Michael Hoyt's on the team, but the question is he on the team right away to start the year? Is he healthy enough? From what I saw last week at OTAs, and we'll see more today, like, he's on track to maybe be ready to play. So let's just say he is. That's four. Now it might come down to the guy they talk a lot about, Javon Solomon, versus a guy like Michael Dana, which is, he's a two-time Super Bowl champion, has a lot of experience. I mean, you're probably looking at a five guys at this position, but you could probably get yourself to four if you want to be a little more fat at other areas like defensive tackle.
Sal Capaccio joining us on the Western Hotline. Sal, what's next up? What position are you charting next?
Yeah, I'm going to look at the down linemen now, the defensive tackles and defensive ends. And I just think part of we have to retrain our brains, guys. We really do. We have to retrain all of our brains, and the fans do, and everybody, and how we talk about these positions. Again, because even I get caught up. Like, do you want me to call it edge rusher? Do you want me to call it outside linebacker? Do you want me to call it defensive tackle, defensive end? Because, for example, like, what we all know as defensive end was the traditional Joey Bosa, Greg Rousseau, right? Those are defensive ends. In this defense, the Bills aren't, that's not defensive ends in this defense. In this defense, the defensive end is the guy that's lining up as the 4-eye technique, as the 5 technique, the guys that are outside on the tackles, outside the tackle, inside the tackle, but there's another guy outside of them. So that's going to be Landon Jackson, for example, right? That's going to be TJ Sanders. That's going to be Ed Oliver. They're going to be called defensive ends. I'm going to still call them defensive tackles because in my way of thinking, I think a defensive tackle is a guy that puts his hand on the ground and then he's interior because there's guys outside of him, if all that makes sense.
Right.
Yeah.
And then practice, like, I know we don't really get official injury stuff at this point, Sal, but is there anybody you're wondering about going into this week? Dawkins wasn't on the field, right? And I know he's not the only one, but aren't there a couple guys that are maybe there but aren't on the field?
There, but not on the field. Well, I believe
maybe Dawkins and Brown.
Deion Dawkins and Spencer Brown, right. I think, from I believe it was Matt Perino, my colleague who was at practice last week. I didn't see him. I believe he wrote, and I could be wrong, but it could have been somebody else. They saw them both like after practice, but they weren't on the field at all. We know that. Right. James Cook wasn't there. I'm not concerned about that. I'm thinking about guys like, okay, I saw Josh Palmer rehabbing off to the side. Like, is there more to that? What's going on? Like, where is he right now? Christian Benford wasn't there. Not too concerned about that. I'm looking at what is the update and status right now on Dorian Strong, who wore a neck brace last week and wasn't on the field. Mm-hmm. He was on the field, but he's walking around wearing a neck brace. Is he, you know, is there any actual like chance of him playing and suiting up or anything like that? And then the guy that I think that I want to see out there and where this is going, it's interesting, is Dorian Williams, because he wasn't at the day that we were there last week. And yet I think that Caleb Elarm's Orr has a legitimate shot to try and win a spot next to Terrell Bernard on defense at linebacker. But I think Dorian Williams is right there. And like, this might matter. Like, all these reps these guys are getting this offseason.
Elarm's Orr, for those that don't know, he was fourth round pick, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
All right, Sal. Well, we'll be listening today, or waiting for Jim Leonard, and we'll chat tomorrow and hear what he has to say and recap it with you then.
All right, guys. You got it. Thanks.
Thanks, Sal. 803-0550 is the phone number if you want to chime in on anything. Bills back at OTAs today.
The lead article at NFL.com, 11 players in the league where it's a make-or-break season.
Yes, and I saw the picture is of three players.
Uh-huh. The first player talked about in the article is a Bill.
Yep. It's Keon Coleman. Also in the picture is C.J. Stroud. Okay. Yes. And the third picture is George Pickens?
Yes.
It's a make or break year for George Pickens? What? I think he made it.
He's on the list.
I think he made it. I said it already three times.
Yeah,
The Coleman, I think there's Keon Coleman discussion fatigue, and I understand why. Mm-hmm. I would love to hear the case of, like, what is a make it season for him?
For Keon?
Yeah, isn't it just like a role player who's on the team for two more years? Like, that's making it.
I think making it for him is just
being a guy. You would take him having a Gabe Davis year would be a dream come true for Coleman.
Someone that doesn't make headlines for an entire year negatively. That's it. I don't need him to do anything special. Right. Just don't have a story in November about how you were late. Don't have a story in December about how you fumbled in a bad spot in the game. Just a non-controversial season.
Yeah.
I don't need him to do anything statistically that blows you away. But be a professional football player. That's it.
Yeah,
that would be make it, I think.
Play out your contract, do well, sign somewhere in 2 years. I mean, I just don't think there's much of an avenue to him to get to the top. But, you know, I suppose it's possible. I never want to rule it out.
Other quick players that are on this make or break list, Marvin Harrison Jr.
Okay.
You mentioned Stroud. Bryce Young, J.J. McCarthy, and Kyler Murray are both listed.
Okay.
Also, Deshaun Watson is listed on this list, and I don't know what make it looks like for Deshaun Watson at this point. I feel like that's over, but whatever.
803-0550. We'll get a break in. 1-888-550-2550. Hope you enjoyed your long weekend. We're back to it today. Jeremy and Joe here on WGR.
It's Sal Capaccio.
Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio, Sal Capaccio, Sal Capaccio, Sal Capaccio
on WGR.
Hour number two here on a Wednesday. Zach Jones, Joe Calley, Owen Parker rolling with you here on a beautiful morning. Derek Kramer out today. And this is another edition of the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it in Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. You did hear the music. The Bills were on the practice field yesterday. We did hear from one of the coaches. And for more on all of that, Sal Capaccio does join the show on the Western Hotline. Sal, good morning. How are we doing, man?
I'm great. Good morning to you guys, too.
And Sal, I mean, we are running just through some great days here. You guys had a beautiful day yesterday on the field, didn't you?
Yeah, it was warm. It was nice to get out there and watch football in some warm weather, and that was very cool because it's not always like that this time of year. It's kind of hit and miss, so we'll take it when we can get it for sure.
Absolutely. I mean, especially too, like the summers don't last too long here. I mean, some of us finally got into like golf season, although if you went golfing this weekend, you had to deal with a little bit of mud. But so, Sal, yesterday, OTAs again, Bills around the practice field. At least for me, and I know for a lot of people, maybe the most interesting thing, Jim Leonard spoke with you guys yesterday. What were your big – he talked for over 20 minutes. What were some of your big takeaways with Leonard?
Well, I think there's a couple of things before the content. I think just kind of the way Jim Leonard is in front of a room, right? You go through these coaches through the years, whether it's head coaches, coordinators, you know, even position coaches to a degree. But, you know, they all have their own personalities. They all have their own way to communicate with the room. Jim Leonard comes into the league as an undrafted free agent, fights his way to make the team, and he was always a, I'm not gonna say incredible fiery personality, but this is a guy that super competitive. You know that. You know he's all about business and football, but he's so calm and collective in front of the room, right? And when he talks, he has this quiet confidence. He's really smart. I think he's a really smart football guy, and even his players. I think one of them, they said he's a geek a little bit, but he's super serious. Like when you talk football, he's all about football, and I think they love that about him. Look in his eye, and they know that he's serious. He knows what he's doing. He's very intentional. And then when he talks to us, and look, it's May, right? I think it's going to be different in August in training camp and through the season. It's going to be a little bit different here. You talk about maybe the intensity. It might not be there right now in that regard, but he, I think, was really calm and collective, and he understands, you know, what we're asking and wants to give us, you know, as good of an answer as he possibly can without giving away, you know, details. And I appreciated that about him yesterday, and I think that that's going to be really kind of fun. Matt Bova and I just did a podcast, and Matt had a really interesting way of comparing it. He said he's somewhere between Leslie Frazier and Bobby Babich, if that makes sense.
I see. And in terms of the media, I enjoyed listening to both of them, both Bobby Babich and Leslie Frazier. Sal, me and you have talked about it off air about we really enjoyed Bobby Babich's press conferences.
Yeah.
Leonard was up there for me, and like I was maybe halfway through it, and I'm like, this sounds like a guy that was an interim head coach in college, and that a program like Wisconsin would trust him enough. It does not sound like a guy that is a first time NFL defensive coordinator. He really doesn't. He's very professional. And Sal, I really like too that he was just open and honest about how, you know, the finished product is probably not going to be week one, year one. Like, they're going to have to build this out. And I think also too, just being open and honest about they needed better depth, specifically cornerback.
Yeah, so I also think I liked he was open and honest about the fact that he said he kind of, you know, took a step back from a coaching like title standpoint because he felt maybe he kind of skipped a couple spots along the way, right? And he wanted to make sure he got, you know, to do everything he needed to do to be a defensive coordinator again when he got a chance. And of course, he's been the college route. He's an interim head coach, a defensive coordinator in college, position coach in the NFL. And people could say, well, that's a step back and, you know, career-wise. And for him, it was intentional, so to speak, which is he wanted to make sure that he kind of got all the things he needed to be back put in this position. So you're right. I like the openness. I like the awareness and the honesty about it. And then the thing that he said that got, you know, a lot of reaction from people was him saying, hey, this isn't going to be, we have to be realistic about the players we have as we try to build this out. And Tim Graham had asked him a question about, you know, through the years, did you kind of think about when I become a defensive coordinator again, what I would do, what it's going to look like? And he said, of course. And guys, we all know that. I mean, in our own lives, right? If you're not the person in charge, you're always thinking about, well, if I was ever in charge, I would do this or I would do that, right? It happens. It's natural for life. So he said that, and now he is in charge. And then he said, but now he's in charge and, you know, he has a vision for what he wants it to look like. And let's be realistic, that can't necessarily happen right away, right now. And he's going to have to do his best to adapt and be flexible to get to where it needs to be this year as they go through this process. And I think, guys, that was taken by fans. And I don't blame fans for thinking this way, which is, oh man, it's kind of like deflating. Like, oh, you're telling me the defense is going to take a step back or it's not going to be as good. But I just want to reassure everybody, like Jim Leonard's here to win. And he's not looking at it like, it's going to take a couple years. Who cares if we win? That's not the case. He is here to win. He knows that. Like he's a defensive coordinator in the NFL with a team that's Josh Allen that's expected to contend for the Super Bowl. Like that's not an option. So he's going to do everything he can with every player he has. And some are going to fit perfectly, and some aren't going to fit so perfectly, but he's going to do what he has to do with that defense to make it fit perfectly for how he needs to run his defense.
So as you're breaking all that down about how sort of differently Leonard thinks about the game and approaches it, how maybe he sounds different, I think maybe it's just because I'm overloaded with all the 4-eye, what's the new defense going to look like, yeah, schematically stuff. But I'm really interested in the difference in the sort of personality of the organization as a whole. I think we've heard so much about Brady being a very, very different sort of head coach vibe. And I'm getting an impression here from you that Leonard appears to be a very different thinker in terms of a defensive coordinator. And I'm just curious whether you've seen any sort of tangible differences in how maybe the coaches or players even are approaching things already through just, you know, a few weeks of some off-field stuff and a couple of OTA sessions. What kind of differences have you seen maybe in that sort of department from this new staff?
You know, what's interesting is I know that all staffs do this, guys, and I know they do this every year. But, like, we've been on the field and have seen them do these, like, really interesting competitions. And, like, for example, yesterday was they had these really big circles, like big hula hoops, let's just say, right? But they were really larger than what you would actually have with a hula hoop. You put it on the field, and they had, like, the offensive lineman against the defensive lineman. And it reminded me of, like, a grade school competition where one person goes and has to go around the circle, and then as soon as they're done, the next person goes. And we get through five people, and whoever wins, wins. They did that yesterday, right? And it wasn't even necessarily a going to a straight circle. There was one where it was like more of an oval. You have to go all the way down and all the way back. It's like sprints, down and back, and whoever wins. And the competition part of it, they're always making competition. And again, not saying that's new. I know that all staffs have. I mean, Sean McDermott did when he was there, Rex Ryan. Everybody does that. But you could feel the energy and you can feel the intensity when even we were just watching that and how important it was for those guys. And I think that that's something that each of these younger, vibrant, energetic coaches are bringing. Certainly, I think Joe Brady brings a type of vibe and a type of personality that is different than Sean McDermott. It just is, right? We all know that. Sean was definitely more of the stoic, you know, very much about business. And yes, you're going to have fun. We're going to celebrate those things. And we're going to be competitive and all those things just talked about. But Joe Brady is like, you know, popping the air out of a balloon and breathing and saying, let's go, and filling it back up and popping it again, right? And all those, and the way that you want to kind of approach your daily tasks and how you approach people just feels different in that regard. I think that Jim Leonard, a little bit somewhere in between those two. Jim, I think, is much more of a, he's a thinking kind of guy. He's a thinking kind of coach. He even said he doesn't talk a lot in meetings. He doesn't want to. He wants his players to talk. When he speaks, they're going to know like what he's about and what he means. He wants to listen to them and what their ideas are and walk through that with them. And I just find it really a good kind of contrast between the two. Now, really, Joe Brady's the head coach, right? But he's running the offense, and Jim Leonard's running the defense. So I think you have a pretty interesting dynamic between those two.
Sal Capaccio on the Western Hotline. Sal, just a quick question. There's a couple quotes I saw from Leonard just speaking on some of the defensive players. He says, I think Ed Oliver is going to be really disruptive in this defense. He speaks about Dorian Williams. Do you have a big takeaway? Any players he seemed to really, I guess, through his speech, gravitate towards or anything like that?
Well, not necessarily unprompted, right? It was mostly about questions we asked, but mm-hmm. You know, you can kind of glean a little bit of what he feels about players. And listen, guys, we all know the way this works. Coaches are going to talk, you know, pretty glowingly about most players this time of year. It doesn't matter, right? Or whenever. They're not going to go there and start throwing them under the bus. Yeah, this guy doesn't fit. We don't know what we're going to do with him. They're not going to say that. But I think that when they do answer questions, you can get a little bit more of kind of a sense of what they really feel about them. Now, when Jim Leonard took the job, up until the last few weeks, he's talked a lot about Cole Bishop in this regard, right? How much he's really excited about Cole Bishop. Well, listen, we haven't seen Cole Bishop on the field for the 2 weeks we've been out there. Attendance yesterday, there was probably about 10 guys or so that weren't out there. Cole Bishop was one of them. Yesterday, we asked specifically, you heard about Ed Oliver. Now, he wasn't practicing yesterday, but that was a question that was asked. And what he said was, Ed's going to have a little more freedom to do some of the things that really make him special. And I'm interested in seeing that. What does that look like with Ed Oliver? Maybe not keeping him inside of a box, so to speak, and saying, just go do what you do, be disruptive. And, you know, we'll take care of it. If you get beat on a play, we'll have somebody backing that up. Don't worry about that. Right. I think that's really interesting. I thought the way he talked about Caleb Elarms Orr, the linebacker, the rookie linebacker, was super interesting because he was asked about that competition. He was asked about Dorian Williams. We haven't seen Dorian Williams out there. Dorian Williams, though, he also spoke very glowingly about him. I just think that position, guys, next to Terrell Bernard, is a true open competition that we're going to be monitoring a lot during training camp. I think left guard's a competition, but to me, that's Alec Anderson's job to lose. That's the way I read it. I think linebacker next to Terrell Bernard is truly... Now, you're going to see Dorian Williams probably line up there and take the first rep because he's the four-year veteran. I get that. But I think that's a true competition. I love how he spoke about KEO, Caleb Elarms Orr.
And Sal, I mean, that's a player, I mean, as somebody along with Derek and Nate Geary when we were covering the draft, Elarms Orr, Skylar Bell, like it was around that period where I think for a lot of fans, the draft really turned around. And if you were following Chris Trapasso and his draft write-ups, Elarms Orr, like the whole feeling there was he might be a second-round pick kind of value. And now for already to be hearing the coaches talk so glowingly about him, I think is a huge positive. I did want to move away a little bit from what Leonard had to talk about and what we saw on the field yesterday. Sal, you've been talking a lot. Michael Hoyt, when he's been working off the side with his injuries, there's some pretty good signs there, right? You know, the explosive drills he's been doing. But I saw this yesterday from Carl Jones of Channel 4. Josh Palmer was working on the side with trainers. And it's just, you know, I think for as positive as I feel on the offseason for the Bills, I've really come around to it. Some of these free agent contracts they've handed out to receivers, I think have been a real anchor for them. And Palmer, somebody, it's been injuries for him, but he never really got off the ground. And I think already for Bills fans, not a great sign.
No, and that's 2 weeks in a row, by the way.
Okay,
he was also off to the side working with trainers last week when we were out there. And he's dealing with something, and it's May, right? They're not going to put anybody in a position now if there's anything bothering them to go out there and further aggravate it, right? I mean, it's just not worth it. You're not going to do that right now. So Josh Palmer, he would do, you know, some individual work, and then we would see him off to the side working with trainers. And along with Michael Hoyt, Joe Andreessen off to the side as well. So let's just talk about Palmer, though. You brought him up. If the Bills were to move on from Josh Palmer, they would still have to be on the hook for $9.4 million, which isn't ideal. They could clear $2.3 million in cap space, but they'd be on the hook for $9.4 million. So I don't know if that's something they want to do, but on the field, I still think they believe Josh Palmer can really help this offense, but you can't help what your best ability, your availability. You can't help if you're not available. And last year, he dealt with a lot of injuries. And now already starting this year in OTAs, you know, credit to him, he's out there, but he's dealing with something, and we'll see if he can get on the field sometime before, you know, mandatory minicamp or what that looks like once mandatory minicamp happens. And then you're dealing with a little bit more of a crowded room, I think. Yeah. We know DJ Moore, Khalil Shakir, and Keon Coleman are here, and, you know, they're going to be guys on the team, and we all know that Keon has, you know, different issues where through the year, can he do everything right? But yeah, he's on the team and he's going to play. And of course, Skylar Bell is going to make the team and he's going to play. That's four. Josh Palmer would slot as a number five, but you do have Tyrell Shavers who's coming off the injury. You have Trent Sherfield, who is kind of the Tyrell Shavers insurance and replacement, I think, if he can't go. And I think they'd like to have a guy like that. That's not Josh Palmer's role, right? And then you have Mecole Hardman, who's, you know, a guy who's got speed. He's working as a return man. Can you get him on the field to give him a little bit of run? So it's going to be interesting to see where Josh Palmer falls into all this. And I agree with you, not great for him to be off to the side. But again, that this is May, and anybody right. dealing with anything is going to be, you know, not out there right now doing everything that they could do.
Right, absolutely. By the way, Mecole Hardman wearing number one for the Bills. I'm just, in terms of number analytics, he's making the roster. He's going to play a role. Again, just based off of numbers, that's where he's at. Sal, last thing for me here. We haven't really gotten to talk about the schedule for the Bills because with the Sabres going on, and then you took a little bit of vacation, and then the playoffs were going on, and so that kind of got lost in the weeds a little bit here. I'm starting to go through more stuff with the Bills now as we start to, you know, transition away from the Sabres. Sal, I've been really on that. I don't know how many takeaways we'll be able to have with this coaching staff, even with this team, until January, because the floor is so high when Josh Allen's your quarterback. Boy, the schedule makers are going to put that to the test with these first five games. At Houston, home against Detroit, home against the Chargers, home against New England, and at the Rams. I mean, if you walk out of that 4-1, I feel like most people are going to be like, Super Bowl.
Yeah, I think so too. We're gonna know a lot about this team, find out a lot about this team in the first month of the season, And then, you know, the fifth week against the Rams too, you can include that. But I mean, they have a gauntlet of a schedule, and you go to Houston to start, and we know what that has been like for the Bills. And that's not, you know, something that it's not going to be a pushover opponent for sure. That's a team that went to the AFC Championship game last year. Then you come home on, you know, a very short rest to open the season against Detroit Lions, who had a down year last year. They're favored to win the North this year. I just looked at the odds this morning. They're favored to win the NFC North. The Chargers with Mike McDaniel now running their offense and what he could mean to them. You have the defending AFC champions in your own division, the New England Patriots. And then, of course, the Rams and Matt Stafford. We know what they've been, right? I mean, all of these games, if you're 4-1, I think Bills fans would take 3-2 right now, right?
I think so too.
You'd probably take 3-2 and say, look, if you come out of this at 3-2, I think you're feeling pretty good, because then you go to the Raiders, you should win that game. You go to the break. Is 4-2 at the break a good record for the Bills? I think it might be.
I would take
considering
it.
After that, you have 2 weeks to get ready for Baltimore. You get Minnesota on a Monday night. You get the Jets and the Dolphins back to back. Like, if you come out of this 4-2, I think at worst you're looking at 7-3 after 10 games.
Agreed. And that's why I was saying, like, I mean, if they're, you know, 4-1 out of that initial run, if they only have one loss going into the bye, Sal, like, I think that's why a lot of people would start to, you know, even nationally start to, you know, look around and go, is this the year? Because you see all of a sudden a soft underbelly opens up. Vikings, we'll see what they're at with quarterback as well. Like, that might be a team that's taking a step back. The Jets, Miami, bad. It's just, man, to start the schedule off like it was, I looked at that and I went, ooh, no, we might be able to say some things about this team. And I, you know, again, on the negative side of things, if they're 2-3 or what have you, I mean, that could be a really rough go. But I might even say this, because of how bad they've been in Houston, if they just win that game, I might be like, nope, they're fine. We're going to be just fine. They won in Houston. We're all good. But Sal, before we let you go here, what's next for the Bills? Do we have another week here of OTAs where we'll have a media day, or are we starting to wrap this up a little bit?
No media the rest of this week. It's generally been on Tuesdays. We'll get the full schedule again. The Bills, you know, will send that out to us, and we'll get that. You know, I'm guessing next Tuesday we'll be back out there for the media day. That I don't think that's been confirmed necessarily. And then let me just look at the schedule here. I believe the week after that would be mandatory minicamp week. So really, you only got one more of these OTAs, and then you got mandatory minicamp around the corner, and that's when guys have to be there. Yesterday, quite a few guys missing, no James Cook. And again, it's May, it's voluntary, and just because a guy isn't there on one day doesn't mean he's not there like today or tomorrow when they're doing some work right on the field. So I just want to give the picture to that and let everybody know. But James Cook, no Greg Rousseau, Bradley Chubb, I said Cole Bishop, Ed Oliver. Ed Oliver came out in street clothes later, so did Spencer Brown. Deion Dawkins wasn't there. There's been some guys missing, but that can't happen in a couple weeks when they have mandatory minicamp. And then they'll go for a few days and we'll be out there for all of that. And then it's what they call the dead period between the end of mandatory minicamp and training camp through June and the end of July.
And with that, we'll have the World Cup, so we'll all still have sports going on,
for
so
sure.
That'll be nice. All right, Sal, let's get out of here and enjoy the rest of this beautiful day. Thanks for jumping on.
All right, guys, you too. Thank you.
Sal Capaccio there on the Wester Hotline. That really is quietly going to, like, save most of us.
The World Cup?
Is the World Cup in June and July, by the way, because I heard you guys talking about Joey Chestnut, July 4th hot dog eating contest.
Yeah
we're going to have a round of 16 World Cup games. I'm not touching that heinous program that is put forward to us every year. I won't even touch it. I'm gonna feel like a free man.
You're not a big July 4th hot dog eating contest guy? I never have been.
When did we start caring about it?
The hot dog eating contest?
Yeah, when did
I don't think I ever did. I think I watched the highlights. I don't think I've ever watched it actually on TV.
I've never watched it. I've never met anybody that gave even a little bit of a care about it.
And yet they show those crowds. It's bumping in Coney Island.
For sure.
The one positive there is the guy that introduces everybody, a poet. Everyone's nickname is the coolest thing you've ever heard.
That's true.
What's Chestnut's nickname?
Oh, I can't even remember. Give me one moment. Because usually,
I mean, is it not Joey Chestnut? Is his name not Joe? Like, his name is
There's a nickname that's, like, unbelievably crazy.
Oh, great.
Give me 1 minute.
My favorite guy at those is actually not any of the guys that eat. I like the guy that chugs. Badlands Chugs.
Yeah. Yes.
He goes hard.
Badlands Chugs.
AI is telling me Joey Chestnut's nickname is Jaws, which
that's
fits.
That's not what I saw.
I don't think that's it.
Fine.
AI.
Loser nickname, in my
loser
opinion.
Loser nickname.
Yeah, I don't care about that even a little. But I will care about the World Cup.
We are going to have that. It's just going to be like a nice, like, it's just warm embrace. We're like, oh, you thought you had to watch that? No. Argentina and the Netherlands are up in like 20 minutes.
The Glizzy Gladiator.
That's terrible.
See, that's just something somebody said on Instagram one time.
Yeah.
Yes. I saw that in an article attached to him because he's on parole right now.
The worst.
There is an epidemic of sports nicknames in North America, specifically. There is an epidemic that needs to be adjusted.
With the boxing, death of boxing, pretty much, I'm going to go ahead and say that because the sport is nowhere near what it was
back
in its heyday. You don't have the nicknames anymore that you would get. Like, the King of Sting, right? Like, Mike Tyson. Like, I don't remember Mike Tyson's nickname. I'm not going to lie to you. That might be but
boxing was very famous. MMA, fighting sports, very famous, especially in America.
Iron Mike, that's what it was.
Nickname, by the way.
Chuck Liddell was the Iceman.
I wanted to give you time to think of it.
I appreciate it.
I just sat here and watched you not believe you didn't know Iron Mike Tyson.
See, I do know Iron Mike Tyson. I was thinking of Mike blank, because it's always like the middle.
Right.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I was trying to put something there and it just wasn't working. But like, the Rocky movies make so much fun of that. The Italian Stallion, Apollo Creed has 18 nicknames just like Muhammad Ali.
That's right. Yeah.
Like, you know, like, you don't have that anymore. You don't.
But we are in a total epidemic in American sports with nicknames. You go on any sports reference page, you haven't heard of most of them. And the ones you have heard of, you're like, I saw it on Twitter and I was just as angry when I saw it then as I am now.
Yeah, nicknames in general stink now.
Like, we're getting Whale McCarr getting brought up, right? Like,
that one.
See, but that's good.
Colton Chaos is good, and that's on the page now.
Yeah,
that's right. But like, I because we're talking about World Cup, but like, I go to soccer. Mo Salah is leaving Liverpool, the Egyptian King. Hell yeah!
Yeah, that's cool.
That works for me.
The Egyptian King.
Like, that is good. That's
awesome. Hmm. Yeah, no, there's, and I mean, like, there are old school nicknames. That my favorite nickname ever is Danny Gare, Ticket.
That works.
Unbelievable. Mm-hmm. Like, that's so good for him.
I think Peyton Manning was good too. The Sheriff.
Sure.
Or great. Just Sheriff. But like, that was good.
The Black Mamba. We're forgetting about Kobe Bryant.
Yes.
Like, come on.
Yes.
There's a lot of ones, but recently it feels like everyone's trying to have one and it's just too much.
I feel like the downturn started with Tom Brady, TB12.
That was, Well, what are we doing here? I mean, that's not even a nickname.
That's a whole other conversation.
That's a whole
the name
other,
and the but, numbers thing is.
But I feel like that was the start of it.
Deflatriate? I don't know.
The amount of teammates I had with like JK88 in their bios made me. I hate it.
I could see it in your face. You're just like, no. It's a dark subject for you.
JK88. Put that on your stick if you need to put it somewhere. Like, don't Instagram bio JK88.
No, that's terrible.
Come on, man.
But we will not have to watch the atrocity that is the hot dog eating contest. I think I want to look this up when it first started getting big, because I think there will be a correlation of like the downturn of humanity. I think when like that got the world got worse.
King James ruined it.
Because he gave it to himself, didn't he?
Yeah. Calling yourself King James, that's where we started teetering on the edge of no return.
Getting into a bad place.
The Great Bambino.
Great Bambino, yep. There's a few of them out there. Michael Phelps, Baltimore Bullet.
Mm-hmm.
That works.
Shohei the... No, okay. I can't do it. I was going to say the gambler.
The gambler.
Or that's what I call Calvin Ridley, because he actually got busted for
that. Yes, that's
He
true.
Did get busted
Calvin
for that,
the gambler Ridley. Like, we need more of that. We need more of that.
Sure. I don't disagree.
Tage TNT. TNT's not
TNT's
bad.
TNT's good.
TNT's fine. A lot of them got quick.
Benny's just Benny, though.
See,
the Rat King. That's awesome.
Rat King works.
That's good. But, like, how is too many? They're not all earned.
Most of them are not earned. Most of them are not earned.
Get a grip, people.
803-0550, the number to call. We'll touch a little bit on the Bills here. I do want to dive into those first five games and I think what they could mean for the Bills and sort of the perception for them going into this year, where it's a new defensive coordinator, new head coach, but the QB is still the same and he is still as good as ever. Zach Jones, Joe Cali, Owen Parker, this is WGR.